This is the 21st Show back live. I'm Brian Mackey. It was just over 15 years ago, at the start of 2008, that a law called the Smoke-Free Illinois Act went into effect. It prohibits smoking in public places and workplaces, both inside and within 15 feet of entrances, exits, and windows. The law followed several attempts, some successful, some not, to pass smoking bans in cities around Illinois. Supporters of the ban said it would have health benefits, keeping workers from having to spend hours a day breathing secondhand smoke. Opponents worried about the effect a ban would have on businesses, especially restaurants and bars. Fast forward to the present, and what was once controversial now seems common. That was a point made by a member of our texting group, Ryan in Champaign, who wrote, "I can't imagine ever being in a smoke-filled room again and thinking it was okay." For others, the ban opened up new possibilities. Jan in Merrillville, Indiana, told us, "As someone who has worked in pulmonary medicine for over 30 years and as an asthmatic, I personally think it's a law that truly benefits everyone. My husband, a musician and lifelong smoker, was initially upset, but when he realized it had zero negative effect on our ability to go out to our favorite clubs and bars to listen to and play music, and that it actually made it easier because I could go without having to worry about the cigarette smoke triggering my asthma, he was totally fine with it. He and all of his smoking friends just go outside and smoke and talk, maybe not so fun in inclement weather, but they do just fine." Jan also says, "We live in Indiana now, and there are many places that allow smoking, and we can't go. I refuse to patronize an establishment that doesn't care if I can breathe. There are fewer of those places, however, especially in Northwest Indiana." So, 15 years after Illinois effectively banned indoor public smoking, has the state seen an improvement in health? And how has the ban affected businesses that were worried the change would hurt their bottom lines? Joining us now to reflect on all this is Christina Hamilton. She's Director of Advocacy for the American Lung Association in Illinois and Iowa, one of the most prominent backers of the statewide ban. Christina, welcome to the 21st Show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Also with us, Angie Bailey, the System Director of Community Health with Southern Illinois Healthcare. She was part of the smoke-free Carbondale effort in the late 2000s. Angie, welcome to you as well.
Good morning. Thanks for having me as well.
And to talk business with us, we're also welcoming Marilyn Martin. She has co-owned the Mary Lou's Grill in Carbondale since 1990. Marilyn, thank you for making the time to be with us today.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Later in the show, we expect to be joined by a bar owner and president of the Illinois Licensed Beverage Association. For now, though, we welcome your thoughts and questions at 800-222-9455. Did the smoking ban change how you live your life? 800-222-9455. Maybe you work at or own a business that was affected, for better or worse, by the switch to a smoke-free Illinois. Join the conversation again, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. So, Christina Hamilton with the American Lung Association, I want to lead off with you, and I want to take our minds back to 2007 as the ban is being considered. A key argument among supporters was the effect this would have on public health. Can you just remind us, what did we know about the health effects of smoking and especially secondhand smoke?
Sure. So when the U.S. Surgeon General's report came out in the 1950s, that was when we first made the strong link between smoking and chronic disease and ultimately death. And that really set off a spiral of a lot of advocacy around the country to decrease access to cigarettes and decrease exposure to secondhand smoke. And so we started seeing ordinances, smoke-free ordinances pop up in Illinois dating back to the 70s. So really saw a groundswell after that Surgeon General's report came out linking smoking to poor health outcomes.
Angie, what was the push for a smoking ban like in Carbondale? How did you start to get the idea there?
Yeah, so in the Carbondale area, each year in Illinois, the county health departments do a process called iPlan, or Illinois Project for the Local Assessment of Needs. So in Jackson County, cardiovascular disease was named a priority health issue with tobacco use and exposure to secondhand smoke as a priority that needed to really be addressed in the communities. So that's how it got started. And then there was an action team formed. And then from there, a group called Smoke Free Carbondale. And the American Lung Association even hired a company to do a survey of residents in Carbondale to see what they thought. And 75% of residents believed secondhand smoke posed a serious health threat. So all of those things kind of came together.
It's one of those issues. I remember when these laws were coming up in different cities around Illinois. I was in Springfield. Angie, because you mentioned the pretty significant public majority support for this kind of ban, but it was a much closer question among some of the governing bodies around the state, right? What was that fight like in Carbondale?
Yeah, so I think part of it was, you know, we had individuals who were in support, and then those were who were not. And in saying that, it was really concern about the economics by the businesses and restaurants and bars, if it would hurt their bottom lines. So I think that was part of it. And just talking with people about what we knew about in other parts of the country, where this had been successful and it had not done anything. It had in some cases even helped the bottom line. And so just sharing that information and spreading the word about what we saw in other areas of the country was really helpful, but varied around the support.
Yeah, varied. Marilyn, I'd like to bring you into the conversation now. As I mentioned, you've co-owned Mary Lou's Grill since 1990. How have you seen the culture around smoking in businesses change over time?
Well, I know as a child of two parents that smoked, and my husband actually was a smoker. He quit many years ago, but we would get people in the restaurant that did not like the smoke. You know, they would still come in, but they would leave because their clothes would stink. But, you know, we put in smoke eaters. We put in an area where there was no smoking allowed, but it didn't matter because the smoke's in the air. And so, we really hadn't decided to change anything other than doing that to try to accommodate people. But we had had a fire in a building next door, and we had smoke damage from that, and we had changed our ceiling tiles and had everything was cleaned. And we had to clean regularly because of the smoke in the restaurant, what it would do to our walls and ceiling. So after that had happened, my husband said, we're just going to do no smoking, period. And that was a full year before the smoking ban went in. And, you know, I'm not for government interference in my business. You know, I want that little as possible. But so we decided to do it on our own. I think there were a few other restaurants, Angie, would know more about who all was at. But we ended up, you know, going no smoking. I think it was January 3rd of 06. And it was the best decision we ever made. I mean, we lost a few customers because of it, but we gained many, many more. So.
That's interesting. So you gained more than you lost.
Yes.
More about that. Why? What did people tell you?
Well, I think people, that didn't come in before because there was smoking allowed in there, they would come in. And once word got out, more and more came. And, I lost my mother to lung cancer and my dad at an early age to heart problems, which were probably part of his smoking. So, it was a really good decision for the health of us and employees and for people coming in. And I still have employees that do smoke, but they have to go outside out the back door to do that.
Yeah. All right, let me take a moment to remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We are reflecting on more than 15 years of smoke-free Illinois now. It was in January 2008 when that law first went into effect, banning smoking in indoor spaces as well as outdoors within 15 feet of a door or window of an establishment. We're talking about that with Marilyn Martin, who is a co-owner of Mary Lou's Grill in Carbondale. And at her business, as she was just saying, actually went smoke-free before the ban statewide. Angie Bailey is System Director of Community Health with Southern Illinois Healthcare and was active in smoke-free Carbondale in the 2000s. And Christina Hamilton is Director of Advocacy at the American Lung Association in Illinois and Iowa. 800-222-9455 is the number to join our conversation today. 800-222-9455. I want to reflect on what some of the arguments around this were like, right? Smoking was such a prominent part of American culture for such a long time. Christina, can you talk about some of the challenges at, you know, shifting this from sort of like a culture issue, I guess what we'd say today is a culture war issue, to more of a public health focus?
Yes. And so earlier I mentioned the U.S. Surgeon General's report, and it was actually 1964 that was released that first linked smoking to harmful health outcomes like lung cancer and heart disease. So that, you know, at that time, more than half of the population was smoking. So it definitely was very monumental that that report came out with that result. And we did see a lot of resistance throughout the country to smoke-free laws. And still to this day, you know, 28 states have a comprehensive smoke-free law, but that leaves many other states that don't have a statewide law. So we still do see some resistance, but especially in Illinois, though, we have seen a culture change around smoking and smoking behavior. People are accustomed to going into indoor public places now and not having to be exposed to secondhand smoke. So despite that resistance in those early years, we've really seen in most parts of the country that the culture change has happened around smoking, and that it's more accepted that our indoor public places are smoke-free. And there were some business owners that's kind of been touched on, that thought that the sky was going to fall, you know, that they weren't going to have any customers, or, you know, that they were going to suffer extensively. But as Marilyn touched on, we actually saw the opposite. You might have lost some customers, but overall, most people enjoyed being in a smoke-free space.
Yeah, it's interesting. I know in Springfield, we saw a lot of businesses sort of expanding, making these outdoor spaces where people could smoke, really sort of investing in their business in a way that maybe they might not have done otherwise. You know, I want to share another text message we got from, this one is from John in Rockford, who mentioned that Surgeon General's report. He said, "Smoking and Health report of the Advisory Committee to the Surgeon General of the United States was published on January 11th, 1964, over 59 years ago. The Illinois ban on indoor smoking was 44 years too late. How many lives could have been saved had it been imposed in a timely manner? Tobacco smoke is a toxic substance, allowing smokers to contaminate the air that everyone breathes with this toxic substance is no different than allowing industries to contaminate the water that everybody drinks with toxic substances." Christina, what do you think took those 44 years? Why did it take to get to that point where these local bans, let alone state bans, were possible after this report? We had the knowledge.
So between 1977 and 1989, 21 municipalities passed smoking restrictions. However, in 1989, the tobacco industry won legislation that preempted local governments from regulating smoking, which froze local activity. So when the industry was successful in passing that legislation, all of that momentum that had been happening in the 70s and 80s stopped. And that was due to their lobbying efforts. So it actually took 16 years for health advocates across the state. The Illinois Coalition Against Tobacco was involved in this, funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. The American Lung Association was a member of that coalition. And finally, in 2005, local authority was restored to municipalities, and in 2006, it happened for counties. So again, the tobacco industry really fought hard against those local smoke-free ordinances, and that did halt a lot of the momentum decades ago. So ultimately, once we were able to get rid of preemption, that's when more states were able to continue to pass smoke-free ordinances and eventually lead to the statewide smoke-free law.
And Angie, do you think that the local efforts of yourself in Carbondale, other people in other parts of the state, I mean, did that sort of pave the way for the statewide ban?
I think that did, as well as, you know, in many of the larger towns and cities in Illinois, they had already passed some smoke-free laws, but a lot of these more rural communities hadn't. So I think getting some of the more rural counties to be able to pass their own local ordinance really helped to further say, okay, the cities, they want to be smoke-free, and so do some of the more rural areas. And two, Illinois had done a lot of work over the years with things like the smoke-free restaurant recognition program, where places could sign up and just say that they were smoke-free, and people could find that list and see where they could go. And then, you know, there were hundreds and hundreds of places throughout Illinois who were part of that. And then with the master settlement agreement from the tobacco industry too, that helped give additional funding to the states. But in Illinois, some of that funding was put towards the Illinois Tobacco Free Communities Initiative and efforts that happened through the state health departments, so that they are then able to continue a lot of this work with enforcement of the Smoke-Free Illinois Act, as well as lots of other programming related to reduced tobacco use, things like the Illinois Tobacco Quitline and getting that going and being strong, increasing referral partners among healthcare providers to the quitline, and just so much more efforts mm-hmm. around reducing youth use. So I think there's lots of different efforts going on to reduce tobacco use throughout the state. Sure. And we're just really trying to reduce the rates.
All right, we're going to continue this conversation after a break. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455 is the number. We're talking about 15 years since the smoking ban went into effect in Illinois. Again, 800-222-9455. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. It wasn't so long ago that this was one of the ways our society talked about smoking.
You know, if you were to follow a busy doctor as he makes his daily round of calls, you'd find yourself having a mighty busy time keeping up with him. Time out for many men of medicine usually means just long enough to enjoy a cigarette.
That's from a cigarette ad in the 1950s. Flash forward 7 decades, and seemingly everything has changed. It's been a decade and a half now since Illinois banned smoking in most public places. We're talking about the effects that's had on public health and business. And we're talking about that with Christina Hamilton, Director of Advocacy for the American Lung Association in Illinois and Iowa. Angie Bailey is System Director of Community Health with Southern Illinois Healthcare. She was also part of the smoke-free Carbondale effort in the late 2000s. And Marilyn Martin has co-owned the restaurant Mary Lou's Grill in Carbondale since 1990. And we have one more business owner joining us now in this conversation. Pete Guizdala has owned Crazy Times Pub and Grub in McChesney Park since 2006. He's also state president for the Illinois Licensed Beverage Association. Pete, thanks for taking time out of your day to be with us. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
So what were your thoughts? You had recently opened just within the last year or two around when this indoor smoking ban was being discussed in the Illinois General Assembly in 2007. What were you thinking about it at the time?
Well, at the time when we purchased the bar in 2006, you know, smoking was allowed in our establishment, and I'm not a smoker, never have been, and I visited bars frequently and just kind of was part of the bar atmosphere. You know, people were smoking. I was a little hesitant on it. I wasn't sure what was going to happen, just for the fact that it's something that's different. It's a change, and most people in my industry or business owners don't like change. They don't like. They're a little apprehensive. I can't say the word. Excuse me. Sorry. little worried about change and what it's going to do to the business. So we were concerned. McChesney Park had started the push here locally before that. And I don't remember if the band actually went through first or not. But I know one thing that we didn't like is McChesney Park was going for the band, but Loves Park, Rockford, Roscoe, Rockton, all the surrounding communities were not. And we did not want to be put on an island from the other areas to put us at a disadvantage for our business. We had several people that came in and smoked. We had several people that didn't. So it was an unknown, and we were concerned what it was going to do to our business.
Ultimately, so, and I do remember that argument about a level playing field being one of the cases that people who supported it statewide did make, and why it ought to happen everywhere in Illinois. Ultimately, was it good for business, bad for business? How do you think about it after all these years?
I think at first it hurt us. Again, it was the unknown. People didn't know how to take it. In the long run, my business partner at the time was a smoker. She liked it better. I had one employee that at the time of the smoking ban, they quit smoking, and they've been smoke-free since. Overall, it's good for our environment, less cleaning that we have to do. We don't have the ashtrays sitting on the bar. We don't have to clean the walls, things like that. And now I think customers have accepted going outside. They've kind of, they take smoke breaks together, so to speak, from sitting at the bar having conversations. Now they go outside and stand. I think my biggest complaint overall that I would have for my establishment and the smoking ban is having to clean up the cigarette butts outside. That seems to be our biggest problem there now, even with the smoking receptacles outside. But overall, again, not liking being told what to do as a business owner from a, I guess, let each business make their own decision on how they want to operate and what they want to do. Hindsight 2020, it's been good for business, I think. It's better for keeping things clean. I think the customers like it. They can smell the food a little bit more in the bar.
Sure.
I remember one time somebody was sitting at the bar and we were cooking bacon in the back, and they're like, "What's that smell?" And I'm like, "Well, it's bacon." He goes, "I don't remember ever smelling it." So we cooked it every day.
Huh.
And so it's different now.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly is. Let's go to the phones now at 800-222-9455. Lewis is calling from Herrick, Illinois. Lewis, thank you for calling in.
Well, glad to be here. I'm not a smoker, and I don't even support smoking. But constitutionally, I don't see how anybody can justify telling private owners what they can do on their property. And I just kind of wondered how your guests justified that imposition of, I don't know what to call it, you know, of non-smoking on private property. And I especially don't see how you can say no smoking on public property.
Interesting. All right, Lewis, let me ask about that. Christina Hamilton, there were legal challenges to the smoke-free Illinois law, right? How did those play out?
Well, ultimately, there's no constitutional right to smoke. And from a public health standpoint, we want people to be protected when they're out in public places, and there is evidence, a huge body of evidence, that there are cancer-causing elements in cigarette smoke. So the motivations behind ensuring that people aren't exposed to this carcinogenic exposure is to protect public health, and there's an obligation for governments to protect people in public spaces. There are a number of laws, right, for private businesses to protect people and protect workers, especially. So we just, you know, fundamentally feel that it's important that people are not exposed to known harmful chemicals in their workplaces and when they're out in public places.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because, and Marilyn Martin, maybe you can speak to this. I mean, there, I'm sure running a restaurant, there are all kinds of government regulations that you have to deal with, right? From floor drains to hand washing and you name it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, all kinds of rules. Yep.
And do you think in from talking to other business owners, does the smoking ban sort of fit into that rubric, or did it seem different somehow when it was going into effect?
Well, honestly, I didn't really think about it back when we did it, because we did it on our own. We just, from the cleaning standpoint and the health standpoint too, we just decided to do it on our own. And I guess in the back of my mind, I felt it would be better for the customers. I'm kind of like the bar owner though. I really don't like the government trying to, dictate what we can and cannot do, especially, I'm not getting off subject, but with this whole COVID stuff, how all that went down, that was an extreme. So, I don't know, the smoking, when it all happened, I guess it was the right thing to do. I didn't really, notice or acknowledge that it was infringing maybe on some business owners' rights,
I don't know. Sure. Pete, I want to ask you, so 15 years on, we got a text from a listener. Let me ask about it. Tommy in Urbana said, I like the ban. People are healthier. Many have quit smoking as a result. Life is less fun also because nicotine is a talking drug. So things are much calmer and quieter. Pete, have you noticed a change in the environment at your bar because of the lack of smoking inside?
I don't know that it's a change in environment because of lack in smoking. We're a local neighborhood bar. We've got all walks of life in here, from your average grandma down the road to firefighters, police officers, union guys, mechanics, and everyone they still come in to socialize and talk and enjoy life. I don't see smoking ban changing that at all. Probably the biggest thing, as she mentioned, that changed our environment is COVID. Smoking ban didn't really change the social aspect of the bar environment.
Yeah, right. Christina, only about 5 minutes left in our conversation. Where are we going from here? I know there are communities out there that still have smoking at higher rates than the population as a whole. There have been other changes in Illinois law we've seen, right? The tobacco minimum age was raised from 18 to 21. Where are you looking as you chart the course toward the future?
Well, enactment of the Smoke-Free Illinois Act is certainly a proud milestone in Illinois and has helped ensure millions of Illinois residents continue to breathe clean, fresh air. This law has helped many people quit. Before the law passed, 1 in 5 Illinois adults smoked, and now that rate has dropped to 12%. So we know that smoke-free laws encourage people to quit and ultimately save lives, and Angie can talk more about this, but we know that decrease in smoking has not been realized equally all over the state. There are some regions of the state where the smoking rate is double, even close to triple the statewide average. So it's important that we continue to advocate for adequate funding for the Illinois Tobacco Quit Line and for the Illinois Tobacco Free Communities program to continue to help people quit, because smoking cigarettes is an addiction. We also are seeing a rise from e-cigarette use and that emerging threat. Those products were not popular in the market when the Smoke-Free Illinois Act was being written and negotiated and passed. In 2011, only 1.5% of Illinois high school students used e-cigarettes, and now that rate is above 14%. And even some data from CDC says that nearly 20% of Illinois high schoolers use e-cigarettes. So we are concerned about the rise in e-cigarette use and The U.S. Surgeon General, once again, has come out and said that e-cigarettes are not harmless. Virtually all of them contain nicotine, sometimes even if they are labeled to be without nicotine, and they have been seen to include other harmful substances like heavy metals and volatile organic compounds. So we are working with the General Assembly to prohibit the use of e-cigarettes in indoor public places. About 30 municipalities have already prohibited the use of e-cigarettes in indoor public places. So similar momentum that we saw with the Smoke-Free Illinois Act, we're seeing that municipalities on their own are recognizing the need to protect individuals from e-cigarettes. So ultimately, we're focused on supporting people who are still trying to quit, making sure there's adequate funding statewide for these cessation programs, and trying to add e-cigarettes to the Smoke-Free Illinois law.
All right, and we're going to have to leave our conversation there. Christina Hamilton, Director of Advocacy at the American Lung Association in Illinois and Iowa. Angie Bailey, System Director of Community Health with Southern Illinois Healthcare. Marilyn Martin, co-owner of Mary Lou's Grill in Carbondale. And Pete Guizdala is the owner of Crazy Times Pub and Grub in McChesney Park and president of the Illinois Licensed Beverage Association. Thank you all so much for being with us today on the 21st show to talk about the 15th anniversary of the smoking ban in Illinois. Coming up on tomorrow's program, there's an organized effort from the political right to get candidates onto school boards across Illinois. We'll talk about that and efforts to counter the push. Plus, the law that aims to end cash bail in Illinois is set to be argued before the state Supreme Court tomorrow morning. We'll have a recap. That is tomorrow on the 21st show. One other programming note. Later this week, we're going to try something new on the show, a listener feedback segment. We'd love to hear what you think about what we've been talking about today or any day in the recent past. Whether you liked it, didn't like it, if you think we got something factually wrong, or for whatever reason, leave us a voicemail. The number is 217-300-2121. That's 217-300-2121. You can call that anytime, day or night. It won't wake us up if you get a thought in the middle of the night. Again, 217-300-2121. You can also find that number and our email address and every other way to contact us on our website, 21stshow.org. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda. Our interns are Owen Henderson and Anaya Jones. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.